championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I am your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by CJ Vogel. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform. Today we're going to be going into the Rice game, taking a look back at that and seeing what can you really take away from a game that was just an absolute blowout from start to finish. Get into a little bit of conference play. What has surprised us from around the Big 12 headed into conference play? Where do we think Texas' ceiling and floor are? And what's the most difficult game going forward? And on that topic, talk about Oklahoma State, which is coming up this week. Bring on Kyle Cox, an editor from the Pistols Firing blog, and talk about what are the keys to that game going into the weekend. So, CJ, thank you for joining me, man. It's good to have you on here. And seeing as you're a student at the University of Texas currently, I have a question to ask you, because all over Twitter, I was seeing reports about the LSU game and how much of a quote-unquote hellhole the student section was heading into that game. And a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, this is dramatic. And what was your experience like? Was it actually as bad as everybody's saying on Twitter, or are people making it out to be worse than it is?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. The LSU student section experience was just that, and calling it a hellhole is putting it quite lightly. But for being a Texas fan and kind of seeing how student turnout has been over the last couple of years, this is exactly what you want to see from your students. I made the trip over from West Campus around 3 p.m., and upon walking around, you know, Bevo Boulevard, getting into, you know, our designated section gate to walk in, I couldn't tell you just how packed it was 4.5 hours before game time. Imagine a Black Friday sale where everything was 100% off. And then once the gates open up at, you know, to start that Black Friday, that was exactly what it looked like outside of, you know, gates 32 and 31. It was insane. Luckily, we were able to beat most of the crowd and kind of squeeze our way through. But the student section, you know, just filling up before the 90-minute clock even started inside the stadium, I thought that was insane. I thought it was great to see that.
So despite experience some students had, and yourself included, is it worth it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You mean this is two top 10 teams on college game day? Of course.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't know. Texas hasn't had this in a while, and a lot of the students were really complaining about it, and so much so that Chris Conte did change it to more of a assigned seating again. But we'll see how that goes going forward.
To be fair, it could have been handled better. I do like first come, first serve. I don't know. Moving forward, it'll be a while before I guess there's another top 10 matchup like that. So they'll have some time to figure it out.
Right. So let's go ahead and take a look at what happened last weekend with the Rice game. And there's not really a lot you could take away from it, being that it is Rice. They're not a great team. It's early on in, you know, the world of statistics this college football year. But so far, Rice is near or at the bottom in a lot of statistics on offense and defense. So there's not a lot you can really take away from this team that you were supposed to beat and you beat thoroughly. But let's go ahead and analyze it anyways. Let's analyze it to death, CJ. Let's do two positives and two things that we need to fix ASAP from that game. And we'll go ahead and start off with the positives here. So CJ, give me a positive that you can actually take away from this Rice game and apply it to the future.
Well, for one, it wasn't a one-possession game at any point in the second half. That's got to be a good thing. But, you know, diving in, you know, kind of position by position, I've been a kind of stickler and kind of hard on the tight ends this year, having, you know, moved on from Andrew Beck last year to to Cade Brewer, Reese, Lieto, and, you know, kind of seeing where Jared Wiley falls into all of this. I was actually very pleased with how the tight ends blocked and ran routes against Rice. Obviously, Rice isn't, like you said, a top-notch opponent in any way, but to say these guys had struggled a little bit in the first 2 weeks is completely fair, I would say. And I thought they did very well. Jared Wiley especially had a very nice seal block on the edge on Keontae Ingram's second touchdown run. And I think Monday Tom Herman said Reese and Cade both graded out as champions. So that's a great sign. I've been looking forward to a performance upgrade at that position for a while now. So good to see there.
Right. There were some points during the game where, you know, there was one play where Cade Brewer got absolutely manhandled, and it was one of the only pressures on Sam Ehlinger during that game. Sam Ehlinger turned it into positive yards, which is what he does. But yeah, you're right. Their play, and especially their blocking on the outside, which is what they've been doing, splitting that Y out to the outside, their blocking has gotten improved over the past 3 weeks. So that is an improvement that is nice to see. One other positive is what you were just saying. Hey, they never trailed in this game. There was no point in this game where it was ever in doubt what was going to happen, which was an absolute blowout. Texas has had a lot of trouble putting away teams like Rice, like Louisiana Tech, early and put their foot on the throat of a team that they should be and are superior to. Texas is finally figuring out how to put away inferior opponents, which is something that Texas fans have not been able to say in quite a while. And that is a huge positive for the program.
And I think it was evident, you know, at the very end of the first quarter when they trot out Cameron Dicker for the 58-yard field goal and he drains it.
Yeah. Speaking about positives,
what more do you want?
Yeah. The special teams for the Longhorns this year will win them a game.
Absolutely.
I'm putting my stamp on that one. This special teams is a far cry from what you had under Charlie Strong. And yes, I know Jamison took a kickback against Rice, but there's not much difference between hitting a 57-yard field goal in, you know, the second quarter of Rice versus, I don't know, next week when they play Oklahoma State. Yeah, I guess it's going to be outside, and there might be a little bit more pressure on him, but still, we know Cameron Dicker can hit those consistently, and the punting game has improved tremendously as well. He is a lot more consistent with his punts. They're nowhere near his cousin. Still, it's improvement from last year, which was just a shank, good. Now it's good, 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 shank.
Definitely an upgrade there. This is, we kind of touched on this preseason, kind of what to look forward to, kind of going position by position. But the defensive line, and specifically Keandre Coburn, it felt like in the first two quarters of that game against Rice, he was in the backfield on every single play. Whether he was going against double teams with center guard, filling a hole on a pulling guard, anything like that. Like, he was disrupting everything. And that allowed for linebackers to recognize plays better, fill holes more efficient, and basically just not allow any type of offensive rhythm for Rice at all in that game. And I credit a lot of that to Keandre and what he was able to do up front in the middle of that defensive line.
Yeah, it was really good what he did. He took over, you know, three guys at times and just absolutely bear hugged them. And
he's just throwing them.
Yeah, he was just absolutely throwing around kids. But I do also think that is a little bit It has a lot to do with the size of the Rice offensive line up front. I hope he can bring that into the conference play this year, but I think it's more of a sign of things to come in the future when he is able to be the big guy and start to be, hey, he's a senior and he's going up against, you know, redshirt freshmen and sophomores. He's going to be able to do that to the offensive line all game long, and he's going to have, you know, what you had in Puna Ford, which is a space eater up front who can at times get you some pressure on the quarterback, but with a lot more size.
Ton more size.
You know, it portends well for the future. Before we dive into what needs to be fixed, let me continue this positive train here and talk to you all about LastStandHats.com. Last Stand Hats is run by a Longhorn fan and a diehard Longhorn fan. So you know he's going to hook you up with the best Longhorn apparel. He has some of the best hats out there. And compared to what they have in the co-op and what they have at the stadium, it's just on another level. The hats that this guy is putting out there. He's got your DBU hats, which after the LSU game, I don't know, maybe you're going to hold off on those for another year. But he does have this awesome Texas Fight hat. He has the number series of all of the greats on your hat. It's just the quintessential thing to do. It's the quintessential item to buy if you're a Longhorn fan. So if you want to get some of that awesome gear, I mean, honestly, the dude is awesome. The gear is great. If you want to get some of this gear, use the code HornsCast10 for 10% off any item on that site. Any item. That's 10% off any item with HornsCast10. So wear your heart on your head and go to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day apparel, laststandhats.com. So let's go ahead and look now at what needs to be fixed ASAP.
Obviously, we've hounded on the cornerback and defensive back plays, kind of, you know, been shaky with inexperience on the outside. There were a couple plays, to say the least, where Texas just got bailed out by drops or an overthrow. That score could have been a little bit more crooked for Rice had, you know, a ball been 2 yards short or a receiver held on. Against a team like Oklahoma State or even Oklahoma, anybody, Big 12 basically, that airs the ball out a ton, that's got to change.
Right.
The space in between zones, it's got to be cleaned up.
Oh, yeah. It's not just that. It's the technique from the defensive backs. There, like you said, there are a few plays where, I mean, hey, they're just going up against a post route, and they get their hips turned around and completely lose the wide receiver. And you're right, they got bailed out by an overthrow or a drop here. But it's simple things that, you know, Deshaun Jameson, you need to know how to play better against that simple of a route, really. Or even Brandon Jones was having some trouble in coverage. And those are certain things that, you're right, if they get to Oklahoma State and that is still a big problem, then they're going to get torched against a guy like Tylan Wallace and even Dylan Stoner.
Right.
Which I think is a wonderful last name.
Oh, absolutely.
On that note, I think one of the bigger problems for the Longhorns, especially in this past game, is that hook curl zone between the linebackers and the safeties. It was something that I talked about after the LSU game on the show. The Longhorns have had a lot of trouble over the middle with those linebackers and their safeties. They do not match well together when it comes to that area of the field. And that's where the Rice really took advantage of Texas. And you could see it. They were gunning after that zone and really trying to put the linebackers in flux whenever they were passing the ball. That was their main goal, and because that's what they saw in the LSU tape. So you can see what exactly, you know, some guys in the Big 12 like Gundy are going to do to the Longhorns. It's pretty obvious where they're going to look. They're going to look to try to take over that hook curl zone, draw the safeties in, and then attack the cornerbacks who will be put on islands.
That's the biggest concern for me at the moment. I was fairly pleased with how the offensive line performed. Obviously, like you said, the inferior competition plays into their favor, but I mean, no sacks allowed, can't complain. Linebacker and play recognition is something that was also on the top of the list. We talked about it, you know, after the game, something that at times I felt like whoever was, you know, in the middle of the field was guessing on holes, guessing on play action. It just took a while to recognize the play, and that won't slide against better opposition.
Right, and once they did recognize it, some of the times it was too late, and two times specifically were the two touchdowns that Rice had in the game. Those are both on the linebackers, guessing on the play, honestly, then realizing, oh, crap, backpedal, 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 and then trying to beat a running back who had a head start to the outside.
And it's just too late. And then they're trotting out the field goal team, and you're heading to the sideline.
Exactly. It's too little too late a lot of the times for the linebackers. Like you said, they're guessing on plays, and that's going to hurt Texas in a lot of different places going forward into this conference play. Last thing that I want to bring up, and something that probably needs to be fixed. It's not a huge problem, because Jack Shackelford has shown he is pretty good, but it is a problem nonetheless. And I talked about it again on the last show, and it was again a problem during this game a few times. Not a huge problem, but some was stunts across the middle for the Longhorns and their communication up front. Now that's going to get better as the season goes on, hopefully.
Hopefully.
But yeah, it's the stunts across the middle gets the Longhorns a lot of times. They just have a lot of trouble with communication between stunts. Not the left side of the line, but the A gaps are particularly vulnerable when it comes to stunting. And teams like TCU and Kansas State are going to take a look at this and be like, that's where we need to attack the Longhorns. I'm expecting the Longhorns to be attacked a lot right there. So I think the Longhorns really need to step up their game in that facet of their offense. Speaking of this conference play, this week is the beginning of conference play for a lot of teams in the country and the Big 12 especially. After these past 3 weeks of non-conference play, CJ, what has surprised you about the Big 12 and just different teams in general heading into conference play?
Well, there's two teams that really stand out to me when it comes to how the Big 12 teams have fared so far in non-conference preseason play. Oklahoma, obviously not one of them. We kind of expected them to do that with Jalen Hurts filling in for the two previous Heisman winners. But those two teams are Kansas State, who is – did you know Kansas State is outscoring opponents by 96 points through three games? Because I did not.
What? Yeah. I did not know that.
Kansas State.
That doesn't sound like the Kansas State I know.
Right? That's obviously the first team that kind of stands out to me so far, especially with the win over Mississippi State. That's a pretty good opponent, I would say. And then Iowa State, I think a lot of people kind of expected them to, you know, be a disruptor in the Big 12 and maybe jump Texas or jump Oklahoma for that second spot or first spot in the Big 12 championship game. I haven't seen what was, you know, advertised from them this offseason with Brock Purdy coming back. Obviously, they lost a ton of talent on the offensive side of the ball, but they returned all five offensive linemen. They didn't look good. They had an overtime win. Didn't look good against Iowa. It's been a shaky start for them to the 2019 season.
Yeah, that's one way to say it, man. Their offensive line, which was supposed to be their strong suit, just does not look like it. And David Montgomery, man, they are missing him so badly. And Hakeem Butler as well. They are missing those two guys tremendously. Still, though, this is pretty on par for what the Cyclones do every year, which is they suck at the beginning of the season, they lose to Iowa, then they get to Oklahoma, they beat Oklahoma, and somehow are a ridiculously good team by the end of the season. It's just clockwork. It's just their formula. I don't know how they do it, but it's just what happens.
That's what, yeah, you go into Ames ranked and you leave unranked. That's what happens.
Exactly. Yeah, that's... You just reminded me that Texas is going into Ames. It probably, though, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, ranked in the at night, late in the season. Yeah, whew, yeah.
Circle but, that one because that's going to be a huge game.
Oh yeah, for sure. Another team that surprised me is Kansas, right? You know,
two wins.
Puka Williams is legit. He is actually. I mean, honestly, one thing that's really surprised me about the conference, not just in Kansas, is the running backs. Darius Anderson, the guys at Oklahoma, Chuba Hubbard, Rashawn Johnson. That's a surprise.
Right.
All these guys, usually it's the wide receivers. You're like, oh my God, this team has this wide receiver and this team has this wide receiver, which they still do. But they also now have these crazy good running backs that have just come out.
Yeah, Big 12 is a running league now. Get used to it.
Exactly. Dude, with the changes in the head coaching, yeah, I mean, kind of. They're definitely more spread to run than they were before.
Cliff leaves, Dana leaves, running backs go crazy. That's how. What's
new? Even though Dana was a run first spread, but yeah, I get what you're saying. But get back to Kansas. They won against Boston College emphatically.
Yeah, and Boston College has a running back that will be gone in the draft in the first 2 days. So it's not like that team isn't talented.
Right. So I think the Big 12 is a lot more talented than we were expecting. West Virginia is definitely going to be one of the less talented teams.
Definitely.
I think they'll be the worst. I'm just gonna say, I think it's gonna be between Kansas and West Virginia for the bottom of the league. But
yeah,
I mean,
easy on that W word.
And Texas Tech. Yeah, and Texas Tech. I mean, I think those are the three bottom. But other than that, I mean, Oklahoma State looks better. TCU looks better. I mean, if they can figure out who their quarterback is and if they have a quarterback.
20 points allowed in two games. TCU yeah. defense is rolling again. They are back in the top 25.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a tough game, like always.
And then you have Kansas State and that North Dakota State coaching crew, which is just making it work in Manhattan. Then you got Iowa State. I think they'll turn it around. I'll probably be proven wrong, but I think they'll turn it around. Oklahoma and Texas. I think that the top seven, you know, there's some separation between the top two, but there's still a lot less space than I was expecting. Speaking of Texas and Oklahoma, though, I think the ceiling for the Longhorns is very obvious in conference play, headed into conference play.
Right.
Undefeated, right? You're undefeated in conference play. And it's doable. Texas has beaten Oklahoma before. They know they can do it. Jalen Hurts, hey, he's a good quarterback. Let's see how he does when it actually comes to decent competition. Texas, it's doable to beat Oklahoma. It's always doable when you get into the Cotton Bowl. This year, with the offense they have and the guys they have on defense, if they can put that together, it's very doable. So we know what the ceiling is. We know what the ceiling is. It's undefeated. What is the least that the Longhorns can do in the conference play? Like, what's the worst they can do? And you'd still be happy with it.
It would be another trip up to Dallas. You go to Dallas twice in a year, especially with the, you know, coming into the season, top 10 in the nation. If you go to Dallas twice, I think you're going to be met with applause from Texas fans. If you just go for that one game in the Cotton Bowl, I think that's when you're going to be met with a ton of flack.
I agree. That means that you're losing either one or two games in the Big 12, depending on how many Oklahoma loses, which is who you'll probably be facing in Dallas twice again. So if Oklahoma loses one, you get two. If they don't, then you get one. That's how many mulligans you get, is how many mulligans Oklahoma gets. And so we know who the class of the conference is. It's Texas and Oklahoma this year. But who do you think will be the most difficult game for the Longhorns this year? What is the teams that, if Texas does, you know, hopefully they won't, but if they do lose to Oklahoma, what's the team that they're going to have to really look out for to make sure that they're on their best game? Because this will be the game that will make or break the season for the Longhorns.
There are two of them that kind of stand out. One of them happens to be next week, or I guess this week. The Oklahoma State matchup at home, Texas. I might have been like 5 years old the last time Texas beat Oklahoma State at home. It feels like every time the two teams play, Gundy just has their number, or the whistles of Allenek just go silent. It's very strange and honestly frustrating for Texas fans, knowing every time Oklahoma State comes to town, no matter how well they've been playing or how poor they've been playing previously to Texas, it's no guarantee no matter what. The second, and I know we just talked about, or at least I just talked about how surprisingly disappointing this team was to start the season, but we talked about going to Ames at night as a ranked team. That's got to be up there with one of the most difficult tasks a Big 12 team faces in a given year. I think by then all the flaws and miscues that team is seeing right now, I think it'll be worked out by then, and you'll be seeing an Iowa State team that'll be tenfold better than what it is now.
We've seen this Iowa State crowd when it's a night game against a big opponent. I mean, they are playing in the rain. It's going to be a big task for the Longhorns to take on, again, like you said, one of the more difficult places to play in the Big 12, which, you know, middle of nowhere, Iowa. So
fly them in at night. That's the secret.
Right. But again, I think you're right. I think the biggest task for the Longhorns will be this weekend against Oklahoma State. TCU is good. Don't get me wrong. Their defense is lights out. But the strength of their offense is that running game. And that's where the strength of Texas's defense is stopping the run. And their offense, their quarterback is, you know, Alex Delton, who did have a good game against Texas 2 years ago, but last year was absolutely, you know, palms to the sky, had no idea what to do. I think if Texas can stop that TCU run game, then TCU is pretty much done for, and I think they can do that. So this Oklahoma State team is the game that I'm concerned with. If it's going to be a blow-for-blow game. And to talk about it, let's go ahead and bring on Kyle Cox, the N editor at Pistols Firing, the Oklahoma State blog. Kyle, how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So let's go ahead and get deep dive into the Oklahoma State season so far. And sort of what are the main storylines so far for the Cowboys as they've just started this 2019 season?
Quarterback change. Spencer Sanders took the reins this year as a redshirt freshman. Pretty good production so far. He had kind of an off game against Tulsa, but he came back in the second half and won, and they won. Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace. Oklahoma State has the top nation's leading rusher and the leading receiver in the nation. So they've got a pretty potent set of triplets there so far.
Obviously, checking the leaderboard, you see them up at the top of the list, and you know, heading into any Oklahoma State matchup, it's tough to kind of gauge where Gundy's going to hit you on the offensive side of the ball. Where have you kind of seen, you know, that balanced attack come from this year compared to years past?
It's crazy because Chuba Hubbard, who's a sophomore now, running back. He's been the number one contributor on offense. Against Tulsa, which is in a non-conference game, he had 32 carries last week. And Oklahoma State really hasn't done that. They haven't leaned that heavily on one running back in a long time. So even with Justice Hill in the last couple of years, he's never was that high of a usage rate. So, but Chuba's a bigger guy, and that's what Gundy's kind of contributed to. So I think with the freshman quarterback, they're trying to lean on the run game and just kind of let the offense go from there.
Yeah, beyond Chuba Hubbard or Chuba Hubbard. His name should be Chuba. It just makes sense. It rolls off the tongue better. But besides Chuba Hubbard, L.D. Brown, your junior running back, not even a quarter of the carries that Chuba has or Chuba. God, whatever his name is. I call him Chubbard. Chubbard. So now you have Sean Gleason in as your offensive coordinator, getting some more innovation into the Mike Gundy offense like it needed it. So what is new with Sean Gleason? What is he bringing? What are some of the main changes that he is bringing to what was already a pretty dynamic Gundy offense?
He's had a couple wrinkles that he's added. He added some more outside zone blocking schemes and some things like that. I don't know that we've actually really seen what he's going to add yet. I think they've kind of dumbed down the playbook, or at least maybe not opened it up very much in the non-conference. You know, against Oregon State, which is basically the Pac-12's Kansas historically, and then an FCS opponent, and then Tulsa, they really didn't need to. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of wrinkles he puts out against Texas, because it's kind of an all for nothing now. I mean, the Big 12 play started, and you're going on the road in a ranked opponent. So it'll be interesting to see what he adds. He had some at Princeton. He was kind of known for his innovative plays, like playing two quarterbacks on the field or even sometimes three at the same time, extra wrinkles and trick plays. So we'll see how much of that actually makes it into the field.
Yeah, you talked about Spencer being young. Obviously, having Tylan is a great security blanket. And Oklahoma State, like, you know, historically has always kind of relied on having that one, you know, go-to receiver dating back to Dez, Justin Blackman, James Washington. But outside of Tylan, like, where are you comfortable, you know, having confidence in other guys stepping up? Is there any names that, you know, maybe on the stat sheet they don't pop out immediately, but any Big 12 opponent moving forward needs to be wary of?
Well, OSU's got several quality guys. Dylan Stoner's been around. Seems like he's been around forever. He plays out of the slot, and he's a pretty sure-handed guy. And C.J. Moore is a redshirt freshman who was a four-star recruit, and he's shown flashes this season so far. Landon Wolf was a guy out of the slot that played a lot last year. A lot of those guys, I mean, he's so far this year, Spencer has been pretty geared in towards Tylan Wallace, and that's one of the things that he's going to need to probably be able to trust some of his guys moving forward, because a lot of teams are going to probably bracket Tylan Wallace and try to keep him out of the game, keep him from beating them. So he's going to have to go to those other guys. But then OSU has a pretty deep pool of receiver talent, but Spencer's going to have to get to those guys and build up a connection with them.
Keeping in mind the competition, how confident are you in wide receiver number two and wide receiver number three if Tylan Wallace is taken out?
I think you, as an OSU fan, you'd be pretty confident in guys like Stoner and Landon Wolf, and intrigued maybe more about the other guys that are younger. It's more about how confident are you that Spencer Sanders is going to make that connection with him, because even during the non-conference, he hasn't really built up a good rapport with them on the field. So I think those guys are okay. I think it's more we kind of wait and see how Spencer Sanders uses them.
Speaking of Spencer Sanders, how do you think Spencer is going to handle the sold-out crowd at DKR and under the lights in primetime game? This is really his first challenge as a quarterback. What do you think, you know, how do you think he's going to respond to this?
That's the big question, I think, for this game. OSU kind of knows on offense, at least they know what they have in Chuba Hubbard and in Tylan Wallace. And they think that they know what they have in Spencer Sanders, but he hasn't played this, you know, level of talent yet or this level of defense yet in conference play. So I think the Tulsa game might have done him some good. Coming into the first two games of the season, he was, you know, putting up a lot of numbers and had, like, I think if I'm not wrong, I think he had a 73% percentage completion percentage heading into week three. But last week against Tulsa, he threw his first interception, had his first fumble, had a pretty rough first half, and just didn't seem to be on with his throws. But I think maybe that will help him. That's what OSU coaches are hoping, that a little bit of adversity would, and still getting a win, will help him before he goes into Big 12 play. But that's the big question for OSU's season, really, is how far can he take them? And this game against Texas, you know, in his home state, you know, he was Mr. Texas football, a school that didn't offer him. I think, you know, those are all the outside storylines we want to add to it. But, you know, how does he step up to the challenge? How does he play? You know, that'll be a big deal as far as his legacy goes and as far as OSU season goes, I think.
And then kind of transitioning into the defense, Texas's offense been averaging about 43 points a game, while Oklahoma State and Jim Knowles' defense is allowing roughly 23. What's his defense kind of looking like in 2019 compared to some of the Oklahoma State defenses from the past?
The second year with Jim Knowles there, it's been a little bit of a transition from last year. A lot of his defensive, his 4-2-5 scheme and is predicated on getting after the quarterback and getting a lot of sacks. They were one of the top teams in this nation last year at getting sacks, but they also lost most of their guys that were doing that, like Jordan Brailford went on to the NFL. So at this point, their defensive front is pretty thin and inexperienced, and they've even shown some weaknesses there. And on top of that, Oklahoma State didn't return a single starter on the defensive line this year. And on top of that, a couple of the guys that were expected to start have been either missed the whole season so far or have missed time with injury. So it will be interesting to see against a Big 12 opponent or a Power 5 opponent how well they do.
A Power 5 opponent.
Right. But, well, yeah, they did play Oregon State. But it'll be interesting to see, I think, what they do against the upper competition.
So where are you confident in their ability when it comes to them taking on Texas?
From a defensive standpoint, I think that they have they've been pretty good in the back end. They've gotten burned a couple times in coverage. Their safeties are young, but their cornerbacks they've got a pair of cornerbacks that are Darius Williams and A.J. Green that are one of the most experienced pair in the league. But it's all about getting pressure on the quarterback, and if they can't do that, it leaves those guys hanging. So I would say that you're probably confident in the back end as long as you can get pressure up front. And then against the middle of the field, there's a little less confidence with the linebackers in the middle of the defensive line.
Right. If you're having Sam Ehlinger sitting back there for like 5 seconds at a time, it's, you know, you can be A.J. Green and one of the best in the nation, but you just can't, you know, can't cover a guy like Devin Duvernay or C.J. Colin Johnson. I'm getting you and Colin Johnson and CJ over here confused, but You can't cover a guy like Colin Johnson for 5 seconds. If you're Jim Knowles, how do you attack Texas? Where are you attacking Texas with your defense?
I think you've got to just try to put pressure on the quarterback. You've got to put pressure on Sam Ellinger. You've got to try to be stable in the front. I think, obviously, Texas is more of a ground-and-pound type running attack. They want to just kind of beat the crap out of you. OSU's been pretty good at times with that this year. Of course, level of competition, you kind of have to wait and see. They've got a couple young guys in the front that have shown flashes. A guy like Trace Ford, who's actually a true freshman, who leads the team in QB hurries.
Man, when I saw Trace Ford back when he was a recruit, dude, that guy was good.
No, he's athletic, and I think they're kind of trying to use him like they did Jordan Belford last year, where they moved him around the line and even put him in coverage a little bit and different spots. I think they might end up doing that with him. But again, they don't have, you know, he's a true freshman. But he's fast and he's athletic. But you need to be able to, you know, stop the QB run game, I think, is the big thing. And then you just kind of have to be good on third down. OSU hasn't been that great on third down so far this year. And you have to maybe cause a couple turnovers is what you're going to have to depend on to let your offense, and hopefully that your offense can keep you afloat for the rest of the game.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, kind of the experience and depth position by position for Oklahoma State. Where do you see them tacking this Todd Orlando defense?
If they want to be successful, they're going to get back to what they started the first couple weeks. Oklahoma State's offense is getting in the screen passes and the intermediate passing game, and then using Spencer Sanders' legs to, you know, keep Texas's defense honest. You can always depend on Chuba Hubbard, and he's shown that. But having your quarterback, obviously Texas knows this. Having a quarterback that can run the ball makes it that much harder on a defense. I think OSU kind of got away from that a little bit early against Tulsa, and that's kind of where they had some trouble. I even think Spencer Sanders might have been trying to play a little bit OSU quarterback guy and was trying to key in on all long balls and trying to go deep every time. If they can rely on Tylan Wallace and some of the receiver talent and just even moving Tylan Wallace in into the slot some, which they've done too, and work on that intermediate passing game and spread things out and just get Spencer Sanders going in the running game.
So, you know, having watched Oklahoma State over the past three games, you know where they're good, but you also know where they're a little weak. So if you're Texas, if you're the Texas coaches, having watched 3 weeks of Oklahoma State film, where are you attacking Oklahoma State on both sides of the ball? How are you taking out Tylan Wallace and Chubbard? How are you doing that? How are you getting your offense to take out that defense?
As far as OSU's offense, I think still with a young quarterback, you want to make him throw the ball. You want to try to contain him and keep him from being able to, you know, see running lanes. And you want to stop OSU's running game because Chuba Hubbard is – everything starts with him. So I think you want to do that. Obviously, Tylan Wallace is – that's what makes it hard. That's, you know, between the two of them. You've got a guy that's a preseason All-American and Biletnikoff runner-up last year in Tylan. And then you've got Chuba Hubbard or Chubbard.
there we go. He's catching on.
Exactly. Who's pretty dynamic too. So I think you want to just put the pressure on Spencer Sanders. OSU's offensive line has been – it looks like it's been a lot better so far this year. So I think that's what you want to do. You just want to make them more one-dimensional if you can. As far as OSU's defense, they're just lack depth on the defensive line and up the middle especially. I think you want to just – if you can gas them a little bit. I've noticed that, like, in the Tulsa game, that there's one quarter – I keep going back to that game, but that's the only real tape that we have so far to gauge anything on. The second quarter when OSU kind of got smoked a little bit by Tulsa, it was because they – made a couple first downs, Tulsa's offense, Phillip Montgomery, you know, the previous Baylor OC, in that Baylor-type offense, they would get a couple first downs, and they would just go turbo and just keep going fast. And then next thing you know, you could see those defensive linemen kind of trotting up to the line, and they were getting slow. And the next thing you know, they were able to get down. They had two straight scoring drives that way. So I think if you can move the ball quickly and get a couple quick plays, quick first downs, I think that's the way you attack OSU's defense.
Right. Now, so with all of this said, we've kind of dove into, you know, where Texas is strong, Oklahoma State strong, the weaknesses, stuff like that. The game on Saturday, what is your prediction a couple days out?
I think if I was betting and not with my head and not with my heart, I'd have to go with something like 42-35 Texas. I think it's going to be a higher scoring game. OSU has won five straight there in Austin. But I think you look at the quarterbacks, the two quarterbacks, you've got one guy who's going into his fourth game and his first conference game, another guy who's a seasoned vet. I think that's a big difference. And the defenses, I think the both of them have enough issues that it might be a shootout like that.
I was thinking something very, very similar. I was thinking 41-34 and just putting on the record. I had the 48-13 prediction last week for the Rice game. So we're right on there. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Smash the over. Absolutely destroy it. Absolutely destroy it on this game. But, hey, Kyle, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Where can we find you online, and where can we find your work?
On Twitter at Kyle Cox PFB, and then pistolsfiringblog.com is our website. Come check it out.
Thank you so much, man. It was awesome talking to you. Looking forward to the game this weekend.
All right, thank you.
Again, thank you to Kyle Cox for coming on the show. An awesome dude. It works for, that site, honestly, is one of the classes of the Big 12. They put out so much good content. So now that we've gotten a view from the Oklahoma State side, let's go ahead and take a look at the keys to the game. I think the first one is pretty obvious here. It's getting Ehlinger in rhythm. This game is going to be another game where Ehlinger is going to have to step up. I mean, we've been talking about how this is the game that Texas needs to take care of. Ehlinger is going to be asked to do a lot in this game, and he cannot have those missed passes early on, those missed opportunities early on. He needs to be on rhythm and get into a rhythm quickly so that Texas is not wasting opportunities like what they did against LSU.
No, no doubt. If you get to the 5-yard line and you have four downs to score, if you do it twice especially, it's the little opportunities like that that Texas needs to take advantage of. I think getting Keontae Ingram in the rhythm and feeding him the ball early like they did against Rice is something Texas has to do to ensure not only the passing game is efficient with him, you know, coming out of the backfield on swing routes, little bubbles, but also in the running game. Oklahoma State's very young on the defensive line. That's something that Texas can wear down rather easily with how they've been running the ball. And I think Keontae is going to be a very big part of that. I think it's safe to say that Rice was a bounce back game for him with two touchdowns. Moving forward, his defense needs to be as high as it can be, moving into the gauntlet of Big 12 play ahead.
Right, and with that inexperienced defensive line, that inexperienced front seven for the Cowboys, I'm pretty confident in this offensive line to push the Cowboys around. So I think another key to this game is going to be, and it goes hand in hand with getting the running game in rhythm, is domination up front on both sides of the ball. And speaking about the offense here, because that, again, goes hand in hand with getting the running game in rhythm, getting that offensive line to establish holes for these running backs. What's going to happen is they're going to create holes for the running backs. The running backs are going to have to take advantage of those. Be patient, wait for them to open up, then hit them hard, because that was one thing Keontae Ingram had trouble with last game, was patience, to wait for the holes to open up. Then when he started to get some patience, that's when he got his two touchdowns. Being patient, then hitting the holes hard once those holes open up, because they will for this offensive line. Once they get that running game going, Jim Knowles is going to bring an extra DB into the box, and that will, again, leave those cornerbacks on islands. So it sort of works from the front back in your domination. If the offense and the offensive line can dominate that front seven, then it's going to make that defensive backfield a lot less potent. And you got two of the best cornerbacks, as Kyle Cox said, and I agree with him, in the Big 12 with A.J. Green. If they can get, you know, them in space with guys like Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson, I think Texas has a good chance of going off. And it all starts up front with that offensive line.
It's nice to have that, the feeling that an offensive line is going to be the strength of a team going into a game. For me, another key is the third factor into these games. It's not the offense or the defense. It's that special teams unit. Cameron Dicker hitting from 57 is
mind-blowing.
That's incredible. That's a weapon Michael Dixon-esque.
Right.
Just one that gets you points. And then obviously DeSean Jameson taking a kickback. I want to, you know,
give Jake Smith the benefit of the doubt, you know, give him a couple more looks back there. But I feel like Deshaun, that dude's electric.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Deshaun should already have that spot.
I said this before the year started. I have no problem with Devin Duvernay being, you know, the guy on kickoffs. And Texas isn't normally a team that takes kickoffs out. Name a team in the conference that if you put Jake Smith and Deshaun Jameson back there, that can match that. That's scary.
That's something that, honestly, going all the way back to Strong, if Strong had the leg of Cameron Dicker, then there are a lot of games he would have won. That is something that Tom Herman has now. So it won him last year, the game in Dallas, the first one.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons. This special teams is going to steal Texas a game, and you're right. It could very well be this one.
Field goal blocking is, that against Oklahoma State especially, that's got to be at the top of the list of priorities.
Yeah.
Hope they're practicing that.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be a yeah, thanks for bringing that one up, man. I completely forgot about that until just now.
Dream about that tonight.
Yeah, I will. But again, going back to the domination up front, going to the defensive side of the ball, Oklahoma State, as Kyle Cox talked about, runs the outside zone a lot and very well. Texas is going to need to be able to neutralize Chubbard in this game, and it's going to start with how they attack the outside zone. That means that guys like Malcolm Roach and Taquan Graham are going to be relied on heavily, and they're going to need to be able to get down the line very well. Their horizontal movement and being able to take on a guy while they're moving horizontally is going to be huge, along with Keandre Coburn, as we were talking about. If he's able to occupy two guys up front, it'll allow these linebackers some movement so that they aren't keyed on as easily as they probably will be.
Contained, that's huge, in my opinion. Texas right. got hooked a couple times against Rice, and they were able to exploit that. If you don't think Oklahoma State's going to try to do that with the success they've had so far this year on those type of runs, then it could be a potentially long day for that defensive line.
Yeah, so guys like Chris Brown and whoever is going to be taking B.J. Foster's spot, making sure that they're able to set the edge for this outside zone is going to be incredibly important.
Right, and like you said, I like Chris Brown moving forward. It's where he's going backward where I kind of get a little iffy, but him in the box, he's been a playmaker all year, and in a way it reminds me of the way Jason Hall used to play when he would get like his 20 snaps a game. He'd get in there and just blow somebody's head off or you know, create some type of a play that turned the course of the game. It's not the same role, obviously, but that's kind of the same type of player I've seen in Chris Brown, the way that he impacts the game whenever he's in it. I just hope he's moving forward more than he's moving backward.
It kind of reminds me of I don't remember who it was, but going up to Sergio Kendall, and they said, "You're a thoroughbred. You don't move backward. You move forward." And that's why they put him on the defensive line. So,
I don't hate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think another key to this game is going to be the linebackers and safeties, their communication. We talked about it earlier in the show. The communication between the linebackers and the safeties in the middle of the field in that hook curl zone has been suspect. And Gundy is going to exploit that. Sean Gleason is going to exploit that. Spencer Sanders is going to try to exploit that. But it has caused the safeties to be focused more towards the middle of the field and less over the top. And Texas will need those guys to bracket Tylan Walls and do everything they can, because that dude has taken 15 catches for 390 yards, which is 26 yards a catch. That's insane.
Video game numbers.
Video game numbers, dude. So they're going to need to be able to stop the middle, stop those hook zone passes, or else Gundy is going to just take advantage of getting 8 to 12 yards a pop over the middle every other play. So, CJ, what is the next key for you to this game?
Next key, it's more of a confidence thing for me. The way the LSU game started with just 7 points being scored, the two possessions in the red zone that didn't convert, I think that kind of weighed Texas a little bit. If they can get ahead and stay ahead, I think that crowd will get to Spencer Sanders, and it should be smooth sailing.
Right. And the last key to the game for me is, it has a lot to do with Spencer Sanders. Spencer Sanders is a dual threat. He runs in a hurry-up, no-huddle offense. Texas, historically under Todd Orlando, has done terrible against that combination. Like, very bad.
Joe Burrow.
It's. I mean, even going back to the last year, Taylor Cornelius is a quote-unquote pro-style quarterback, but runs the hurry-up, no-huddle. He ran 9 times for 54 yards and 2 touchdowns last year. So,
including the dagger.
Including the dagger. So when Texas goes against these dual threat hurry up no huddles, the average quarterback rating for Texas's opponent is around 100. Not a good number. So
no.
Longhorns are going to have to figure out some way to get to this freshman early and often, get the crowd into the game like what you were saying, and make sure that they are able to find some way to either contain or get some pressure on him that isn't bringing guys from the second level after the play starts. But before we get out of here, CJ, what is your prediction for the game? What do you think is going to happen when the Longhorns face the Cowboys this weekend?
I think they're able to limit Chuba Hubbard on the ground a little bit. Obviously, he's a one-of-a-kind back in the Big 12, but I think they're able to make, you know, Oklahoma State one-dimensional for the first half. And because of that, I think they get out to a little lead heading into the halftime. Obviously, Mike Gundy is not one to go down quietly. So adjustments will be made. My prediction is 41-34 Texas.
Mm.
So hit that over.
You're right.
I don't know. I've been feeling the wave with my predictions lately. So I'm feeling good about where we're at right now.
All right. Well, I'm sort of in the same position as you are. I'm feeling confident about Texas's offense, and I feel like this defense can make a play or two. We'll see. We'll see how that holds up throughout
Joseph
the game.
Joseph Asai gets another interception.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Hopefully he's feeling better with the shoulder sprain. But I think Texas wins this one 45-35 in much the similar manner. I think Texas is able to keep it closer in the first half than they did against LSU. And that Sam Ellinger being a more veteran presence than Sanders will help Longhorns out in the long run in this game.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to do it for us. That has been your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And CJ, my man, where can we find you?
Oh, hit me up on Twitter at CJVogel3. Lots of nonsense going on over there. Hit me up. Let's get to it.
And you guys can find both of us on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. You guys can find other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. And on that note, thank y'all for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.